Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Stone Cold Shots, the professional wrestling podcast where the shots are cold and the takes are hot. Every episode here, every 2 weeks, we recap, rate, review a professional wrestling pay-per-view or PAPE. Today we're doing something a little bit different, but before we get to that, why don't you wild things here with me, introduce yourselves to the Stone Cold Shots universe, tell them your names. Tell them, I don't think we've done this one before, give them, break them off a little piece, let them know, what your favorite match stipulation in wrestling is.
We have done this before, but,
have we done this before?
I don't think we've done this before.
Oh, shit.
Because we always say the coal miner's glove.
No. That's, we've said coal miner's glove for a different one before.
So, like, stipulation, like, okay, so I'm the internet darling, Josh Felix Pryor. The spin the wheel, make the deal, that whole wheel, does that count as a match stipulation? Like, just one big stipulation with a lot of,
no,
like,
because
mini...
The spin the wheel is what you use to choose the stipulation.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's a stipulation, like, so it's like a spin the wheel, make the deal match, right? And then they spin the wheel...
Because it's... No, because the match becomes like a fucking...
It becomes a coal miner's glove match.
Or a devil's playground match, or a tables, ladders, and screams match, or whatever.
Because I felt like I could discover a whole bunch of stipulations just by having the Halloween Havoc spin the wheel, make the deal. So I guess I can't...
I mean, Josh, I can't believe you haven't... You have said time and time again to me that your favorite match stipulation of all time is the Royal Rumble. I can't believe you didn't just jump right in with that.
It is. The favorite match type of all time. I don't know, is Royal Rumble really a stipulation on a match, though? It's a match type. I wouldn't say it's a stipulation on a match. It's not like a regular match, you know? Okay, I'm going to have to say the Coal Miner's Club.
Perfect.
I'm going to say...
Who are you?
Really like
Who are you? Who are
oh,
you, buddy?
Good point. Good point. Yep. my name's Lauren. I'm a regular darling. I'm going to say coffin matches. Mm. I really like the concept of having to shove somebody into a coffin and then it's not official unless you close the lid. I love all of the like intricacies of that.
You must be really excited for Darby Allin versus All Ego coming up then, eh?
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah,
it's gonna be a sick match.
Yeah.
And I also really like it. Sorry, I'm realizing I really like it when they keep the content like in story. They change because they've died. I really like the way Lucha Underground worked with the coffin matches, where you were dead when you lost a coffin match. You died. And then you could come back, though, but you would be different somehow, like a little bit more sinister, a little more evil. So, Mil Muertes, he dies, and he comes back, and he has red eyes.
Yeah.
And it, basically, that was the only difference, but it was really fucking cool.
Well, when he was in kayfabe, he was more powerful.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
They changed his name to, like Mil...
Uno
Mortes, the man of 1,001 deaths.
Yeah.
I am nobody's darling. I'm your heel host, Campbell Falconer.
Boo.
And my favorite match stipulation of all time is the Punjabi prison match.
Mm.
I think there should be more Punjabi prison matches.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, right now with the roster. You know, they just released the Bollywood Boys, and in my opinion, the best part of the last Punjabi prison. Well, it's that in a toss-up between Kali.
Yeah. Oh, great Kali holding the title? Amazing. Perfect. But give me a new, like a six-man tag Punjabi prison match with Jinder Mahal and the Indus Sher Boys against like whoever you want. You know,
I'd be into that.
I like the idea of like a cage, like. There's a cage, but there's also another cage outside of that cage, and all of the cages are made out of bamboo.
Yeah.
It's fucking great.
Yeah,
that's pretty good.
Today we're talking about a very specific type of match stipulation. We're doing an episode all on exploding barbed wire death matches. AEW very famously had their exploding barbed wire death match back at Revolution, and we finally got our commemorative t-shirts in the mail.
And we're all wearing them?
We're all wearing the, right now.
Yeah, we're all wearing. And we thought it would just be a fun fun thing to go back and check out. So we're doing like five matches from the history of exploding barbed wire death matches, of which there are many. I know that we definitely missed some.
I was looking at like the kind of list that we got, and I think it's a good mix. You know, I think there's some, you know, iconic ones that we maybe missed, but you know, like the groups brought up, it's like, you know, there's so many of them. We can do a shotgun or something and cover the other ones one time.
I mean, like, we could have done an entire episode just on Onita versus blank, you know, and sure. I think that's gonna be the majority of the ones that we missed. Is it's like, well, we already had an Atsushi Onita match and we wanted to spread it out a little bit.
Yeah.
So sorry, Hayabusa. Sorry, Great Sasuke. Sorry, yeah. Masahiro Chono. But you didn't make the cut.
Well, we heard your matches were really good, but we thought we would choose the first.
The first, the OG.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like before AEW Revolution this year, like, how familiar were you guys with the concept of the no rope exploding C4 barbed wire board cage?
I'm gonna go first here. Not at all. Didn't know that was a thing. I think I had randomly heard, like, I knew that barbed wire was used in matches. Mm-hmm. Didn't know that it could be the ring. Didn't know that you could explode the whole ring.
Nope.
Or attempt to.
Fully fresh. Yeah. Yeah. Or attempt to. Yeah. Yeah. Didn't really work out most of the time, it seems. But yeah. What about you, Josh?
It worked out one time in this card list that I definitely want to talk about.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it was more lore I knew about, right? So it's like, I heard about the Onita matches. You know, like, honestly, the only one I had seen, and this is, you know, I can't even tell you how many years ago, was the Funk and Cactus match, which mm-hmm. we're covering today. But, you know, even with that, I'd forgot just, you know, kind of how brutal and, you know, bloody and ridiculous it was. So, you know, it was good to kind of go back and revisit that one. But, you know, for the most part, I really only knew about Onita really through kind of like, you know, the lore of Onita, you know, the mm-hmm. exploding death matches over in FMW and, you know, in Japan. So
yeah, I'm kind of similar, where I'd heard, like, you see GIFs of like the some of the best Japan pro wrestling stuff, where it's mm-hmm. like, not only is it an exploding barbed wire death match, but it's in the middle of a lake filled with piranhas. And
sure.
Like, you hear about shit like that, and you're just like, this is crazy. And then, there used to be this punk bar in Kensington Market called Coalition that had, like, the smallest fucking TV of all time on the bar. And, like, I used to go see bands play there, and they like, I feel like a solid 50% of the shows that I went to, they were playing Cactus Jack versus Funk on that TV. So, like, I would go up to order at the bar, and there would be, like, those two just beating the fuck out of each other.
Really?
I'd seen, like, clips of that before, but, never very, very kind of unfamiliar with this up until this year. And, like, I think that's one of the things that I like so much about, like, we kind of clown about AEW, like, going through a Rolodex of stipulations, and like, they're doing bunkhouse matches and they're doing this, that, and the other. But it is cool that how much they're, like, looking at a lot of this, like, fun wrestling history and things that have been, like, kind of considered a little bit more niche historically, and bringing that into, like, the mainstream wrestling audience's eyes in a really fun way. If there's no way that if I was only watching WWE right now, I would be going back and exploring, like, FMW back catalogs, right?
Yeah, it's kind of reminiscent of you know AEW, what they're trying to do. It's nice that there's an option where you can kind of get that ECW style match occasionally, right? Like, there's really been nothing since ECW. Like, I mean, CZW, but I really didn't keep up with CZW, and it's not really my thing. Like, that level of mm-hmm. kind of like violence in the light tubes, like, I, you know, it just, it's not my thing. But you know, there's like, a notch or two below that. That's really my thing. And then like it goes past the tipping point where I'm like, eh, we're good.
Have you ever watched any of this like GCW stuff? Like the fucking
No.
no.
No, it's we're just it's CZW, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's the same kind of ballpark for me. And like, again, that's why I've never really seen any Nick Gage's stuff. I'm just not. That's not my deal. It's not my bag.
I got fucking worked the other week. It was like some GCW Outlaw Mud Show, I think it was called, and it was Mance Warner versus Nick Gage. And after the match happened, someone was tweeting about like, oh, apparently the match was like so fucked up and like so violent. Somebody called the police and the cops showed up after the show was done. And I was like, to me, it was a thing where I was like, I don't actually think that anyone thought it was a real fight. What I do think is that this match was good enough that somebody thought they could make up this lie. So I should check it out because if it's so good that somebody thinks that they can get away with this, it's probably worth watching. And it was fucking bad, man. Like it was like there were a couple of really fucking cool spots, but there was so much. It's like so much of like that style of wrestling is like built around like prop. It's like watching a prop comic when all of their props are fucked up, you know? It's like
Sure.
this is already something that doesn't really work 90% of the time, and it's just like fucking Gage staples the dude's quote unquote like staples the dude's tongue to a door and then tries to pull out a thing of lighter fluid to light the door on fire, but
Okay.
his hands are so slippery with blood he can't get the lighter fluid open, and he has to get the ref to open it for him. And then the spot where he sets it on fire and the guy jerks his face away and then gets powerbombed into a flaming door. Fucking cool. Really sick.
Yeah,
But
like
the 5 minutes of a grown man trying to open a bottle before that, way less cool.
don't know, like, so I don't know if you two feel the same, but and I never really thought about it before this conversation, but I like when there's like a really big kind of dramatic thing, and like even like with the Foley Cactus match, it was a little bit much, but there's a point where it's like something adds real dramatic effect to a match. Like, it's like, holy shit, like, that's crazy. Or, like, kind of like an apex in a match. And then, like, with a lot of, like, the death match stuff, it just seems like a pissing contest to see you can take more, like, gory, violent punishment. You know what I mean? Like, it seems less about the actual storytelling and more about, like, who can do the most brutal looking spot and really, like, hurt the other person, and the other person is going to be okay. Like, I don't know. Like, there's something missing there. There's,
It's kind of like, it sounds like to me when I hear people discussing like the merit of horror movies and then like a Saw movie,
sure.
where it's like one is just gore and there's not a lot of like story or any kind of cool character or anything. It's just like, let's put people in horrible, horrible, gory situations and watch it. And then a horror movie is like, there's like a big story and there's this impending doom and like, I don't know, there's way more action and stuff happening. And like one might appeal to some people and one might not, but like,
Different strokes, I'm not trying to yuck anybody's yums. If that's your thing, go for it, baby.
So we're getting into, we got five matches. I pulled most of these from, it was an article that I found. I just Googled like exploding barbed wire death match best. And there were a couple articles that came up that had some pretty good lists. The one specifically that I really liked was, I think it was just called Wild Thing, The History of the Exploding Barbed Wire Death Match.
Great title.
So if you're listening to this and you're like us and you're not super familiar, go and look that up. And they definitely had some like links and stuff in there to YouTube videos with a lot of these matches and plenty more. So we're jumping in with the OG, the very first 1990 Frontier Martial Arts Wrestling. We've got Atsushi Onida versus Tarzan Goto in a no rope exploding barbed wire death match. From what I understand, the story behind this was that it was Goto and like arguing that traditional professional wrestling, like puroresu, was a superior form to Onita's like deathmatch wrestling, and they decided to settle it with this fucking crazy stipulation. So that was kind of the story of the match.
It's funny because Onita, you know, if you look at Onita, like, in his later death matches, coming out with, like, the leather jacket, like, you know, wild thing, and then, like, steel chair, smoking a cigarette, he looks like a, like, such a jabroni coming out. Like, he's got, like, the blue tights and then, like, the white shirt. Like, it just, like, he just, like, he looks just like a dude, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, like, a generic wrestler, like, X, you know?
Yeah. He's, the only thing is that he's, like, he's a little more, like, because the other, like, Goto comes out first, and he's, like, a big hoss, right? And he looks, he's got, like, the singlet on, and Onita comes out, and you're right, he does look like a little plain Jane, a little jabroni-ish, but he's got so many band-aids on.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's got, he's got so many fucking band-aids, and you do get a little taste, right? You're like, okay, I think I understand what this guy is about.
Sure.
I really liked Onita's look for this. Okay. He's wearing, like, he's got this cool, huge mullet. He's got, like, blue sports shorts and just, like, a white tank top tucked into his shorts. Like, it was very, like, sports bro. I don't know. Like, but oh, a cool sports bro.
I got kind of, like, Dirty Daddy Chris Dickinson vibes a little bit.
A little, yeah.
But this one, I love that this is the first one, and there's like not a whole lot of nuance of like teasing the spot. We just kind of get into it right away.
Okay. Yeah. So if you guys want to talk about this first, I got some problems with this match.
It's like the bell rings, we get like 5 headbutts in a row, and then Onita just gets thrown into the exploding barbed wire, and I'm like, let's fucking do this.
Onita comes off like an idiot. Like, he keeps on, like, grabbing at the barbed wire, like, to get up. And then, like, he rolls into the barbed wire slowly. There's so many spots in this match where it's like, what are you doing, Onita? It's like, and I get that it's like, oh, he's used to regular ropes being there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I got that. But, like, it's just, like, he keeps doing it.
It's the first of its kind, Josh.
He keeps doing it. Yeah, to me, it was just funny that it was always Onita. Like, it's never, like, Goto ever makes a mistake and accidentally leans back onto the barbed wire. Like, Onita is fully just, like, he'll just... I find he often just, like, extended his leg out and just, like, got a big spark. Yeah. I think he was trying to... Like, I think he was trying to really sell, like you were saying, like, this isn't what we're used to, it's so weird, but also just, like, because it's the first ever one, I think they were going for as much shock, like, big explosions as possible to really freak out the crowd, because it's, like, that would be fucking terrifying.
Like, my thing was, so this match is, like, about 7 minutes long, and there is a figure four attempt probably once a minute. and so for me, it was a thing where I'm like, okay, I liked the concept of, like, they're not used to the ropes exploding, he's gonna reach for the ropes, but they never use that in any of the figure four spots.
Sure.
It's like, go for a rope break and, like, make it for the rope break and then have it blow up. Like, that would be
That would be awesome if that would have happened instead of him just, like, casually, like, leaning over trying to get up, like, for the third time, and then it exploding on him. I'm like, oh, come on, man. Stop it, Onita. I just want to shake you, bud. But yeah, the bigger fours and headbutts were a majority.
Headbutts,
and DDTs and power bombs. I think those were the only 4 moves in this match, if I'm not mistaken.
The headbutts were nuts, though. Like, they actually, like, bust each other's faces open.
Oh, yeah.
Just hard way with headbutts.
Yeah.
And they're, like, Onita is bleeding so fucking much.
Yeah. They definitely took way more damage from just doing their headbutts than they do at any other point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. As is, like, kind of... I feel like it's kind of a recurring story of the exploding barbed wire death match is, like... One person takes the majority of the explosions, and then the guy who's on top kind of, like, ends up taking the last one, and that's what changes the tide.
And it's usually their first and last shock is, like, fells the beast.
There is kind of that story of, like...
Seminal.
Well, it is. It's kind of that story of like what Josh was talking about in the CZW of like who can take more, right? Mm-hmm. And it's the thing where, you know, in this, like, Goto is technically the traditional wrestling technical powerhouse, and that's why he's able to manhandle Onita into the rope so much. But Onita's just like a tough SOB and won't go down. And when Goto takes the one fall into the barbed wire and explodes, that's what costs him the match because he can't hack it.
Yeah.
And there's like, we're going to see this again and again, but I do like that element of the storytelling here. Mm-hmm. I do think like, there's this match isn't great, but there's some really good stuff in here. And it's very much, it's like a shape of things to come.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And like, you know, I really like that the first spot where Onita took that first bump into the barbed wire, that his back was like cut open, like, and his shirt was cut. Mm-hmm. And you can actually see the mark. So it really left no doubt right from the start that this is like real barbed wire. It's not working barbed wire. It's like, you know what I mean? Like, I thought that was really important to get that done.
I loved that.
Yeah.
It looked so like cinematic. Like, it really reminded me of like a Bruce Lee film. Like,
sure.
It's crazy that his shirt ripped like that. It looks like, to me, when I was watching it, I was like, I know that this wasn't worked because it's been like camera's been on the whole time and he came in with a totally
clean whole shirt.
yeah, but like, it rips in such a perfect way across his back, and there's like a perfect line, and then it starts bleeding later, and it's just like, damn, that's amazing. And it looks so good.
You can see like the blood stain on the shirt grow in real time.
It really sells it.
So Onita goes over in the company that he owns in the match that he pioneered. Surprise, surprise.
The original Cody?
How many exploding barbed wire bald heads?
Yeah, it's exploding bald heads is what's going to be today.
Nice.
I don't know. This wasn't a great match. It was a cool match. It was and out of respect, I'll give it 3 exploding bald heads.
Okay.
Out of respect, could have been a little bit lower. Just on any other. Not first of a kind, still feeling out the moves of an exploding barbed wire match. So we'll go 3 exploding bald heads.
Nice.
That's good.
That's a lot of the lists and both of the lists, the articles that I was reading were both saying that this is kinda, they were like, if you're gonna watch one Onita death match, don't watch this one.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was like, no, fuck you. We gotta start from the start, right?
Yeah.
Completionists. The next one that we have is in IWA from 1995 is the infamous Cactus Jack versus Terry Funk. These all had like really crazy long names that I think this was like no rope barbed wire exploding C4 board time bomb match.
Yep.
Like, I think was the name of the stipulation.
Right.
Something like that. So this is, the ropes don't explode, but there are huge planks covered in barbed wire that do explode.
In each
of the four corners of the ring. And there is a 10-minute timer after which the ring will explode. So this is probably the one where, like, if you have watched any non-AEW exploding barbed wire match, this is probably the one that you've seen out there.
Any non-Onita... any non-AEW, this would be it. And it's iconic. I mean, this one, I don't know. This was fucking wild. This is a crazy match.
Also, just before we even get into the match, so it was like, this was the culmination of like a deathmatch tournament in this Japanese company where both of these guys had to fight through like 2-3 other people in fucked up matches to get there. But this is also the only videos that I could find of this online were with Mick Foley doing kind of like a running commentary over top.
Yeah, it was him reading from his book, so not like a commentary on the match. So he's actually reading the passage from his book on this one. So it was interesting. Right. Like, it was interesting to hear Foley's kind of recollection of it, and it not matching up to kind of what happened in the match. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, you hear Foley talking about stuff. It's like, didn't quite happen like that, but like, then like once you realize what's going on, it's like, oh, Foley's just recalling the match. And the, and that was pretty cool. That was a pretty good overlay to have for the match. So I thought that was neat.
Yeah. It was sick because like he's talking about stuff that happens afterwards, Like, he talks about going home to his family and trying to hide his injuries from them, from this match.
And they keep saying, like, does it smell like something's burning?
It me.
But I like, I don't know. That was cool. Was that, like, it felt very, like, trying to find a version of this that is, like, the pure, like, just the original thing. It was, like, very, I was like, oh, this must be what, like, bootlegging and, like, tape trading and shit was like, where you're like, oh, I really want to watch this match, and the only version of it that I can find is, like, this version with a guy talking over the entire thing.
Yeah. Like, it was good, though. Yeah, I don't know what you two thought of this match, but it starts off pretty, you know, pretty stiff, like Terry Funk, like, throwing some shots. And then Mick throwing some shots. And they, you know, they kind of do, like, the back and forth. Terry Funk has a pretty good spot really early, like, when he doesn't go into the barbed wire when Mick's Irish whipping him. And he stops early and he does the old head point.
Yeah.
It was, like, too smart. And he does it so overacted. And, you know, I always forget this about Terry Funk, but his character was almost perfect for the Japanese audience, right? It was way overacted. Like, it was just, like, you know, pointing to his head slowly, like, I'm smarter than this guy. Because that's a lot of the wrestling over in Japan. It's got to be, like, really kind of, like, over the top, like, really selling the fact that, like, you know, I'm a bad guy, or I'm, you know, I'm this or that. And it was wild, because I thought Terry Funk was actually the good guy in this match. And so I don't know what the dynamic was, but by the end of it, I think the crowd was just like, you know, we'll get into it, but they don't want to see Terry Funk get exploded, you know?
Yeah. He definitely does play more of a good guy, but he seems like a bad guy. They both seem like bad guys.
Yeah.
But he definitely gets, like, the baby face role just by what ends up happening. Like, there's guns and stuff, but
I feel like, so this is a match where, unlike the last one, we do have, like, a pretty good build and kind of tease to the first, like, barbed wire spot into the first explosions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like Josh was saying, where they're, like, just, like, they're stopping themselves.
Whoa, whoa, waving arms, balancing. Like,
yeah.
But I thought they did a really good job considering, like, there are four, we'll say, like, 2-foot by 4-foot boards taking up, like, a pretty significant portion of the ring. And they do a really, really good job where the first, like, 2 minutes of this match is just them, like, sort of, you know, grappling with each other and teasing these spots, and they don't have a whole lot of room to work with, and it's like they really kind of ballet it up there. Like, it's very intricate, it's very delicate. They do a great job.
And the build to the actual first one, and so I forget, is it Funk that gets the first one?
I think so.
Yes.
Yeah, so Funk.
Yeah, so Terry, he's the one, he doesn't even, like, get thrown into it. He kind of, like, gets battered, and then he falls backwards into the middle, the one that he set up in the middle of the ring. It was also crazy to me that they were able to pick up these exploding boards and move them around without them exploding. That was wild to me. Every time they started moving them around, I was like, don't touch it!
It's gonna explode!
Yeah.
They took the bumps into these, all the barbed wire so hard in this match, and watching them get tangled up in it is like, it's visceral. Like just, you're like, oh, like, you're just watching it. You're like, and you're watching them, like, struggle. And Cactus Jack back in the day used to make all these sounds in the ring when he was doing his work, like these, and like all these, like, weird sounds in a match. And you're like, oh man, that really adds to it. And then Terry Funk with his trash talk. It's like, come on, Mick, you son of a bitch. Like all that stuff. I felt that really added to the match, and, like, the crowd's like almost silent, so you can pick up on everything they're, like, saying. Yeah. And then, like, them getting caught up in the barbed wire and then, like, making the sounds they're making. It was just like, it was rough. Like, this match was like it, but it looks so good. It looks so good.
Even like Mick on the like reading from his book where he's talking about where it's like the explosion, you just like fucking dive into this board and then the board explodes.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh yeah, that one like went off like right next to my ear and I couldn't hear for like a portion of the match. Or like one of them went off under Funk's arm and he like actually like fucked up his arm because it was in an explosion. Like, yeah, the way that they were taking those bumps was crazy just for how the explosions, like, because every, a lot of the other matches we've seen is like, the explosions are rigged up to go outside of the ring when you hit the ropes from the inside. So it's exploding away from you. Yeah. This is one of the only matches here where it is exploding at you. It's like you are in the path of the, even if it's just like a fucking like squib or whatever, it's like a really small amount of fucking whatever it is.
Force,
like,
yeah.
That's still gotta fucking hurt or be super loud or very bright in your face.
Yeah, that was something I was thinking about for this one, especially, like, because it did seem so big, the explosion, and so localized to just the board, right? But it was big, and I'm pretty sure there was fire on the board for this one. Like, there would be a little flame there that would quickly extinguish, but it was just, like, on fire for a sec.
Yep.
And I was wondering whether the explosion was like a shock, like if it was an electric shock or if it literally was like explosion and like force that the wrestlers were feeling, like if it was impact or if it was shocking. But I think it was like an impact thing, which seems so gross. Like, it just seems awful. Like
horrible. Horrible.
Yeah. Makes you kind of happy that the final explosion doesn't work, because like, what the fuck would have happened?
So yeah, leading up to the countdown elephant in the room, we get cementing Funk as the babyface. We get like a little run-in interference where some guy in red tights and cactus sort of fuck up Terry Funk and leave him for dead in the ring as it's counting down to blow up. And then we get the first in a long line of underwhelming time bomb explosions.
And Terry Punk is perfect in this, right? So he like there's four little fireworks that explode. He's stumbling to his feet and he's looking around like, what the fuck just happened? Like, he didn't sell it at all. There's no like big thing. And then, you know, Mick, being as great as Mick is, you know, runs back in the ring and they continue to have another 5 minutes of the match. Mick Foley grabs a ladder.
They like, just fully improvise.
It's
wild. Like, and this is some of the hardest hitting parts to me. Like, I feel like they go really hard. They both look like they're in so much pain.
Mm-hmm.
And they just do a whole fucking death match right here with chairs and ladders. And
Mick,
stuff.
Mick's face is like beet red. Like,
yeah.
The entire...
thick blood, like thick blood on his face. Not runny blood. Thick mask on his face. It was so fucking gross.
Yeah.
Gordon Sully would say a crimson mask.
Yeah. There was like one of the spots off the, like, and that's the thing, right? Is the match was supposed to end with the explosion and they carry it on. Like, I thought it was going to be run in, do one big bump. And when Funk kicks out of the first big bump, I was like, what the fuck? What are you doing? Like, this is fucking crazy.
That's
like,
how I felt. He kept kicking out after all of these big spots that Mick is doing. And I'm like, I feel like Mick is probably just like, can you fucking stay down?
Yeah.
Like, end this. You are not okay.
Nah.
Yeah.
So Cactus does end up winning. How many exploding bald heads did you give this one?
I think we got to talk about the ladder spots really, really quickly before. So
okay, yep.
Mick Foley sets up a ladder in the ring. And then goes up to, like, almost the top of the ladder and does a diving elbow onto Terry Funk. And then he goes up again, and Terry Funk pushes him off the ladder into, like, the ropes of barbed wire. And it's the most disgusting thing watching Mick Foley. Like, it was so brutal. Anyway, sorry. I had to throw that in there because, to me, that was the spot of the match. I gave this 4 exploding bald heads. And just by the nature of the match, how crazy this was, and the sacrifice that both of those men put their own bodies through for this match, out of like any exploding barbed wire match I've seen, like, this is the one that I think everybody should check out. This is so good. and it has two parts in it, which is incredible. And they made the most. They improvised and made the most out of a shitty explosion at the 10-minute mark in the match. So,
yeah, it's fucking awesome. It's really, really good. I've also heard that Funk versus Onita is supposed to be like maybe the best exploding barbed wire death match of all time.
Yeah, I would love to see it. I haven't seen it, so.
Just didn't include it on the list because we didn't want to double down. We wanted to spread ourselves out, sort of cover as much as we could.
Fair enough.
Next up, we're back to FMW 1996, the 7th FMW anniversary. This is Combat Toyota versus Megumi Kudo. It's Combat Toyota's retirement match, mm-hmm. and it's the first ever women's exploding barbed wire death match.
Yay. Combat Toyota looks so cool. She mm-hmm. looks like a vampire. She's got this big high neck cape on, and she's got cool eyeliner. She's got like a, I think it was a red mohawk.
It's like, yeah, she's rocking kind of like the Tenzan mullet, where it's like dyed in a stripe down the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Very is, Enzo is Amore.
Tenzan no Amore.
Yeah, she had like some designs in the back of her head too, like dyed in.
I think it was leopard print. Yeah, it was fucking sick.
I like we get a little some backstage like talking head promos before this about the retirement and what the match means. Really sort of sets up the, I guess not necessarily like the stakes of the match, but just sets up like the background and the story and
the
really,
respect. Like it was like there's like a lot of respect between the two.
You get a really big fight feel out of this, right?
Yeah.
And Combat Toyota comes out to X's version of Wild Thing in honor of Onita. Mm-hmm. And that's fucking cool as hell.
Kudo comes out in a sequined feather robe and just a righteous guitar solo.
So, oh, fuck yeah, man.
Mm-hmm. It was so cool.
Yeah.
Entrances to this match were on point. And again, like Campbell said, like a big fight feel. Like this felt like a real main event. There was real stakes. It was like, it was something. And again, it wasn't out of like hatred or vitriol that they're having this match. It was just kind of like, you know, okay, let's do this. And the only way to kind of like finish this off or finish off your career. And it was important to Toyota, you know, to honor Onita. And like, it was just like, there was like so much like behind this that it felt big.
Yeah. So it starts off like very tough, very vocal.
And like this, it starts off, it's like a real wrestling match. It's like they are doing wrestling, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And it's good. It's really fucking good.
It's a good
really
wrestling match.
Yeah. Yeah, really sick. They make you really, really wait for the first explosion.
I paused it to check the timestamp, and the first explosion doesn't happen until halfway through the match.
Yeah.
Like, this is like almost a half-hour match, and the first explosion comes at 15 minutes.
I think this is smart, especially for, like, a women's promotion where, like, maybe the crowd has, like, preconceptions of, like, what women can take or something. Maybe not in Japan, but, like...
I mean, so this is the same promotion that the first match happened in. It's not exclusively a women's promotion.
It's FMW,
Yeah, and so both of these women had been in, like, death matches and barbed wire matches before. This is the first time that it... But, like, facing men.
Oh.
And this was the first match where it was all... female competitors in an exploding barbed wire death match.
Right.
So the crowd was probably like up
they
and
know.
Like ready to fucking go and like knew sort of what these two could do, but like
it's just a good pacing thing to make them wait.
Yeah, it's a good pacing to make them wait, and it's like for us watching this in a more current context, like what like it's so we talk a lot about like 90s stuff and like Japanese things in the 90s being like ahead of its time, and it's like this is a thing that is, like, I feel like the level of women's wrestling in some regard has, like, almost regressed. Like, I don't think even in, like, an insane women's promotion like Stardom, you're not seeing them take fucking, like, power bombs into exploding barbed wire, right? There is still a thing where, like, the only thing that I can think of that is, like, sort of comparable to this in a modern context is, like, Britt Baker versus Thunder Rosa. Where they had their hardcore match.
Right.
And that was seen as like a, oh my God, this is such a huge anomaly. Right. Whereas like men's wrestling has gone from Onita through to, like, you know, you have your Moxleys, you have your Gages. You could rattle off how many different fucking names of dudes taking bumps that are on par with this. And there's this, for whatever reason, didn't really carry through in women's wrestling, like, as much, which I think is really interesting to think about.
Yeah, yeah. But this is sick. Really tough. So, like we said, they really tease out the first explosion, but then after that, like, Kudo, just as the smaller, like, she is the Onita in this match. Like, she takes much of the damage. She takes all of the shocks, like, and gets thrown into the barbed wire quite a bit.
Good visuals on it, too. Like the explosions look great. Like,
yeah.
You know, she was cut open. Like, you can tell, like, it, like optically, like, this, like, it looked really good, too, right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And yeah. So Toyota, like, goes almost the whole match without getting shocked until finally, like, Kudo, what she has to do is she, like, throws herself at Toyota so that they both fall, and the force of her, like, they both fall into the barbed wire and it explodes. So she basically just takes a hit to herself in order to take Toyota down, and that's kind of the, like, turning point for Toyota, where she starts sort of
I was gonna say the selling in this match is great. You know, Toyota just, like, she really sold the fact that, like, you know, it's like, you know, the barbed wire explosion, like, fucked her up bad. And, like, you know, and she was kind of crawling out of there. It seemed like kind of like, oh, it was like she was in the real anguish. And, like, he kind of, like, emoted, like he felt for her. Like, it was just like, holy shit. Like, it was so heavy at the end of the match. And honestly, that this match was a war. It was really good. The wrestling was great when there was wrestling, and the more hardcore spots were great when they're, like, just hardcore spots, you know. I think they told a great story, and, you know, one of the...
Kudo fucking picks her up.
Yeah.
Kudo picks Toyota up and flips her.
There were
crazy feat of strength.
Yeah.
There were a lot of, like, towards the end, there were a lot of, like, really, really big spots where it was, like, any single one of these could finish the match, and there was, like, kick out after kick out. And I know we talk a lot about false finishes and stuff, but none of that felt cheap to me in this context. Like, those, that series of kickouts of, like, especially there was, I think, somebody hits a fucking tiger driver that looked like it broke the other woman's neck.
Yeah, it was Kudo on Toyota, like, and, like, she, like, picked her up and, like, barely got her down right, and, like, got, like, upper half of her neck / shoulders, right? It was brutal.
And that every single one of those kickouts was completely earned and, like, a really, really great spot. None of it felt like, you know, like 17 super kicks or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm.
So Kudo does end up winning. You know, you go out on your back when you retire. It was the right thing to do. how many exploding bald heads did this guy, man?
You know, this is on the fence between 3 7/8 and 4. And I'll tell you why. Because, like, as an exploding barbed wire match, you know, it had some good spots in here. But, like, you know, if I compare it, like, if I'm doing my scale today on exploding barbed wire death matches and not, like, regular matches, right? I have to, like, keep it honest. So I'm going to go with 3 7/8 for this one. It just... Not quite at that four. Like, if you look at the Mick Foley, Terry Funk match, it was just like, oh my god, this is exactly what I think an exploding barbed wire death match should be. This was a great match. In any other circumstances, probably 4 bald heads. But for this genre, I'll give it 3 7/8.
Okay. That's interesting logic.
Huh.
I was going to be like, fuck you, no, it's a 4. But you know what? I agree with your logic. No, it makes sense. Like, as a wrestling match versus an exploding barbed wire death match. Yeah.
For me, like, Josh, you had said if there's one match from this episode that you would recommend people go and watch, it's the Cactus Jack versus Terry Funk. I'm saying if there's one match that I would recommend for people to go watch, it's this one. I think this is the best all-around total package.
The best match. But so, are we recommending matches that have the stipulation, or are we recommending exploding?
Exploding barbed wire. Oh, I see. I gotcha.
again, and I feel bad because it's like I don't want to give a lower mark to a women's match, you know, like I, you know, but I also want to keep it fair, you know. Yep. So, and I have a hard time with this next match not giving it the highest rating out of any of these fucking matches.
Okay. Tell us what it is, Campbell.
So this is one where just really quickly, just before you get into it, Campbell and Lauren had sent through this match. I had no context. I'm like,
me neither.
Why the fuck? Like, why the fuck am I getting this match? And it's like, I see the length of the YouTube clip, and it's like 11 minutes, and the match doesn't start until I don't know what, like 4 or 5 minutes into the actual YouTube clip.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what's this like 6 minute bullshit whatever thing that they've sent me? I'm like, and then I go back and double check. I'm like, did they send the right link? Yada yada yada. Please go on, Campbell, though. That's the context in my head when I'm building up to watch this.
Yeah. So this was one where I was really trying to find something to bridge the gap between, because the true heyday of the exploding barbed wire death match was Japan in the 90s. And I was trying to find something that would give a little bit more of something closer to a current context, something that we could compare the AEW to, something a little bit more modern.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really hard to find something that was like American or something that happened after 2000, because like FMW kind of stopped like doing this. The like CZW, like I thought for sure there was going to be a CZW exploding barbed wire death match, but they had a lot of barbed wire matches, a lot of like no rope barbed wire matches. None of them were exploding. ECW apparently was supposed to do an exploding barbed wire death match between Onita and Sandman. They had it booked, and then visas for Onita fell through, I think the story was, so that never ended up happening. There was one other American promotion that did an exploding barbed wire death match at a fucking non-televised house show. So this, while not technically being a no-rope exploding barbed wire death match, is basically the closest thing that you can find in a post-2000s American televised exploding death match. So this is a little bit of an outlier, but this is as close as it gets, and I believe that the Onita Hayabusa one happened in a cage instead of with barbed wire, so it still is in the tradition.
Okay.
So this is the final episode that never actually aired on TV of MTV's Wrestling Society X in a time bomb exploding steel cage death match between Team Dragon Gate and The Filth and the Fury.
In 2007.
Yeah, in 2007. So Josh, before we get into the match, what did you watch Wrestling Society X? Was this a thing that you were aware of in 2007? Or like...
I think I was managing a Rogers store at the time, and it came and I keep it on. I play it because I had a PVR in the store, so I could put on different things. And I used to record Wrestling Society X in the store. And I think I maybe watched a few episodes, I remember like X-Pac was in there. I want to say
Vampiro.
Maybe Vampiro. Whoa. maybe Conan was in there.
Mil Muertes was in it for a little bit.
Yeah, so but like these are people like at the time, like back in 2007, I had no scope, but like, you know, I think Sanjay Dutt was in there. There was a lot of people. Seth Rollins, Jimmy Havoc, mm-hmm. or not Jimmy Havoc, it's the other Jimmy.
Jimmy Lloyd.
Jimmy Uso.
Jimmy Uso was in there. No, but they had a lot of people that like were kind of like on the up. Like this was like right before Ring of Honor scooped a lot of these people up, right? So but I thought it was always like pretty good. It was a little cheesy and like overproduced, and it felt kind of like an MTV show. So
totally.
Which was a little tougher to get into. But like I used to put it on occasionally, right?
Just from like the context that we get from like Josh was saying, there's like a 4 minute package before this match about all about Team Dragon Gate and how they were abducted and
reprogrammed
as in like eyes taped open, made to watch something, like forcibly brainwashed into like a whole new team.
Yeah.
I can't remember who their like leader who was doing this was. It doesn't super matter, but yeah. So they're like the evils. They're like completely brainwashed evil tag team facing the Filth and the Fury, which is just a really great name for a tag team. One of whom is Teddy Hart and the other is Cross, Matt Cross, right?
M-Dog 20, yeah, Matt yeah. Cross.
Young, M-Dog. Young Matt Cross.
Without a beard.
Yeah, just baby-faced.
This match is fucking crazy. Insane.
This is crazy.
I have like two notes for this match because it happens so fast. It's like breakneck speed.
This match was... I think enjoyment-wise, like, as like me smiling watching this on my bed, I was, like, ear-to-ear, like, smiling, laughing this entire match. Like, this is, like...
Like, the ratio of minutes of match to sheer enjoyment is through the roof, right?
A six-minute match. I would recommend, forget all the other matches we talked about, everybody go watch this match. It's, like, 6 minutes of your day. It's incredible. Like, this is an incredible match.
You can find it for free on Teddy Hart's YouTube page.
But, like, Teddy Hart is so good. Teddy Hart is, like, so good in the ring, and he's so impressive. And I've seen very little of Teddy Hart. But, man, he's doing, like, springboards. He's doing flips. He's doing, like, all these crazy twists and turns. The guy is ridiculous.
Yeah. He does a fucking crazy shooting star press from like scaffolding above the cage.
Yeah.
It's great. Like Matt Cross is doing all his Matt Cross shit. It's so good.
Team Dragon Gate is good too.
20 billion flips. Yeah, Team Dragon Gate is sick as well. Like they're all flipping, like, it's like they're all in constant, like, topsy-turvy motion at each other the whole time. Then Team Dragon Gate's, like, brainwashed man general comes in and gets involved. He comes in, he does a DDT to the ref.
And then they throw the ref into the exploding cage?
No, so what happens is, so Team Dragon Gate guy DDTs the ref. Hart does a moonsault from the top platform. Cross does a backflip into a crazy explosion from the cage, which we need to talk about. That's
We need to talk about this.
The explosion from a body hitting the cage looks like... It looks like a giant explosion that like, takes up the entire wall of the cage.
And the camera's shaking.
Like a giant, yeah, they shake the camera.
It looks like a fly swatter. Like, it literally looks like one of those shocking fly swatters, but like human size. Like, it's crazy the explosion that happens.
It's so fucking good. Like, I cannot stress this enough, how good the explosion... Like, we have not seen anything. Like... Bless Mick Foley and Terry Funk for taking those real, like, flesh-burning spots. Trade it in for this.
This is insane. And so this then what happens...
like if Michael Bay directed a wrestling match. Yes! Like, that's what this would be.
So what happens is the leader of Dragon Gate blinds Hart... Teddy Hart with a flamethrower. Like, he brings flamethrower into the ring.
So much that happens in this match, I forgot about the flamethrower.
He shoots it at Teddy Hart's face, so then Teddy Hart's running around and he's blind because he's been flamed in the face. Yeah. He grabs the ref thinking that it's one of Dragon Gate and fully throws the ref into the cage. He gets shocked. I'm at this point thinking the ref is dead because he's not a wrestler and he just took one of those explosions that look like murder.
Mm-hmm.
And it was crazy. And then, like...
Incredible.
And then, and then basically, like, there's just more flips and shit, and then Dragon Gate runs up and they press the button.
To start the timer for the ring to explode.
And at this point, you're thinking, like, the ring will explode. Yeah. Like,
it's making this, like...
So it's like an air raid siren.
It is so intense.
It's so intense. And so, like, his partner and the manager run out of the ring. And so he's up above the cage on a scaffold. And so he realizes that he has to, like, they're like, get out, get out. So he has to climb down the scaffolding and then, like, dive out of the cage, like, head first. And then I don't know who wants to cover this explosion. Like, I
think you should, Josh.
It's the most, the ring literally fucking explodes.
Like, it looks like the building explodes.
It looks like the entire building explodes. Like the pyro that they had going off, like, for the explosion in the ring is great. Like, you could tell the real effects, as far as what they had, was awesome. But then also the after effects that they do, with the camera shaking, with everything else, they make it look like the ring fucking explodes. And it's the best thing ever.
It looks like a space explosion. Like, the entire screen goes white, right? Yeah. Like,
it's like the first cut of the episode, they just smash cut to footage from Bikini Atoll. And the producer was like, no, 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 do more.
Yeah.
And
then, yeah. Like, I wish I would give this 5 bald heads all day. Because I can't imagine a better, I'm not, because it doesn't make sense. But just my pure enjoyment watching this match. It was 6 minutes long. I had no idea what the fuck I was looking at. The wrestling was insane. But it's not like, I gave it 3 3/4 exploding heads, and I thought that was a fair rating. I would have, I wish I could have gave it more. If this match was half an hour long or like 25 minutes long, and they kept up that same, who knows? I may have gone Meltzer on it. I would have maybe given it 6. I don't know, like, for what it was, like, jammed into that, like, short of, they nailed it. And this is Wrestling Society X.
Yeah. Nah. This made me want to go back and watch, there's only 10 episodes and they were only a half an hour each. Like, I want to go back and watch all of Wrestling Society X after this.
Let's do it.
Let's do an episode.
Yeah, we'll do a Wrestling Society X episode.
Yeah, we'll just pick some good matches out of there.
Cool. Sick. I love it. Had that written down in my notes. I'm glad that I wasn't the one to suggest it. I'm glad we're all on the same page about this.
After watching this match, man?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Oh, this was so fucking cool. So this brings us to AEW Revolution 2021. Kenny Omega versus Jon Moxley. In an exploding barbed wire death match. This is our final match of the list. When we watched this mere months ago, like, what was your takeaway in the moment, like, when we watched it, before we get into sort of the rewatch now?
For me, it was my first ever exploding barbed wire death match, so I was really into it. I do remember thinking it was very, very good and really well done up until that last botch, mm-hmm. which will, like, everyone knows that the ring doesn't explode when it's supposed to explode at the 10, or I think it's the 30-minute mark for this one. But they do have an incredible match before it, and for me, it was just like, oh, here's Moxley doing his fucking deathmatch, like, gross bullshit, and, like, Kenny Omega fully going for it as well. I really liked it. I thought it was good, but I was kind of like, I never want to see this again. But, because I'm not into, I just don't like seeing.
Sorry to make you rewatch it.
Yeah, I just don't like seeing people ripping their skin open, and there are definitely points in this match where Moxley, like, looks like his skin is tangled in the barbed wire and he can't disengage and it looks so fucking horrible.
Yeah, Moxley strikes me as one of those guys that, like, you know, he comes from that CZW kind of thing, so he's got that mentality a little bit. And then if you think about, like, Onita and, you know, Cactus Jack, Terry Funk, he wants to be one of those guys so bad. And I feel like at his core he is, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying, you know, you're just pretending to, you know, want to be or acting a certain way in a match. But, you know, I think he's idolized that type of match and that type of wrestler and that kind of, you know, that's who Mox wants to be. And He's done a great job. I think he's the most convincing in making it mainstream more than any other wrestler, you know?
That's a great point. Like, because this match, especially after watching all of the ones leading up to this one, it is the most, like, well-produced and sort of cinematic. Like, all of the spots are have a big build and lead up to the spots. And, like, I don't know. It has really great pacing and,
Like, that's the thing, right? Is it's Moxley is maybe the best in the world at doing the hardcore shit while also being a good wrestler. And it's taking that, and this very much felt like a Kenny Omega match as far as the pacing goes and as far as the storytelling goes. And Kenny Omega is one of the best wrestlers in the world right now and is amazing at putting together a great match with a great story. And it's like you marry these two sensibilities together. And technical difficulties aside, this is basically, like, for me, this is almost a perfect match. I remember coming out of this, and even in the moment when the explosion happened, and I was just like, yeah, but, like, how are you going to be mad at the half an hour that came before it? Like, sure, this fucking, these little fireworks at the end are shitty, but if, like, if that's enough to ruin a half hour of near-perfect professional wrestling for you, you got a bigger problem. You know, that's you... Or at that point, you're just like looking for things to be upset about. And again, you can't really.
I'm rating this on an exploding death match scale. So if I was rating this a regular bald head rating, it would be a different story. This match, I have to rate it on the explosions, I have to rate it on everything. The barbed wire. Lauren, can you please chime in and get your hands up?
You're really burying the lead here, pal.
Yeah, I don't know if we're jumping to the end or not. Are we?
Oh, no, 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 for sure not. I'm just saying, just, you know.
Because I do have something I want to bring up, but...
Keep this in mind.
I can wait till the end.
No. Well, yeah, let's get into it.
Let's dive in.
We'll stop teasing him. We'll just... Moxley's jacket is fucking terrible.
yeah.
Renee, are you going to say that to the new mother, Renee Paquette, at home right now, who made that?
Well, this is the thing. We were discussing it, and it seems like it's probably her jacket.
But, like, Jon Moxley's so big, there's no way that she would wear a jacket
I'm joking, but, like, it's very much, like, styled in the way of, like, a women's jacket.
Their shoulder pads are just so, you were saying, it's like Sasha Banksy,
right? Yeah.
Sasha Banksy, that's going to be my graffiti name. but yeah, it's him like taking the swigs of liquor on the way to the ring. Yeah. So fucking cool.
Yeah.
So sick.
Him having Mox bedazzled on the back of his jacket. Like, the exact opposite level of cool.
Honestly, I would have loved to have him like have a cigarette, lit it up, have a seat on a chair. Like do the full Anita if you're going to do that. Mm-hmm. Like just like do the whole thing.
Yeah. Even just, like, because he always comes in from the back and he walks, like, he comes out from the crowd entrance and he walks along the side of the arena to the ring.
Yeah.
But even just for this one, like, he walks slightly into the crowd a bit more than normal. Like, he deviates from his path where the guy, like, rushed him that one time.
Yeah.
Like, he walks along to the crowd area, takes a swig, and then walks back. Like, it makes him seem more unhinged and more cool because he's just kind of, like, pacing around and just like
and unscripted
exactly and he's not rushing to get in the ring, right? He's kind of just moseying around.
Justin Roberts is making a name for himself as maybe the best ring announcer in professional wrestling right now.
He's really polarizing, like, because it's like a lot of people hate like the long, so like the Jon Moxley, and then like the kitty I love it too. Like I'm a big fan of it, but like there's a lot of like backlash online about like it's like he's so over the top. It's like that's kind of what I want my ring announcer to be, though.
It's kind of like you're watching professional fucking wrestling. Like, it's too over the top. Fuck you. Shut up. You're an idiot. That's something that I noticed. Like on this, and have noticed recently, like that I really, really like in AEW is like Justin Roberts comes out and he has his title card and he's the dapper yapper Justin Roberts. Like he has a personality. The like when the ref comes out to in his fucking hazmat suit in this, and they're like, oh, you know, referee Bryce Remsburg, this is the sixth world title match that he's officiated for AEW, and it's like, you're giving your non-wrestler's character, and you're building the personality of everybody in your promotion, and it doesn't feel as interchangeable as like a lot of the kind of like the W, or like I couldn't fucking name a ref in NXT if my life depended on
it.
You
know? Yeah. Eyebrows and Hot Ref.
Eyebrows Ref because of Shinsuke Nakamura's Instagram,
yeah,
and Drake Wirtz through anti-mask protests. Yeah. Like, that's, you know, they're not characters on a show the way that like Aubrey is a character on AEW Dynamite, and there is like story around that, and I like it. Just feels very forward thinking, and it feels like they're like AEW has a little bit more thought process behind their product as a whole, and is giving me a more like finished package in a way that WWE just isn't right now.
It also makes it feel more like a family too.
Yeah,
like yeah, because they were bringing up like, even I think it was just this last week of Dynamite, they were like, oh, like this ref just had a new baby, like, yeah, and then they were talking about, oh, like there's a lot of new babies here with Mox and Cody, mm-hmm, and like, I don't know, it was very nice, like it was just,
or it's like in New Japan where you have like Red Shoes, you know, like, yeah, and he's like a ref that is a character, he has a lot of personality, like I appreciate that.
So both Moxley and Kenny Omega are first trying to, like, they start off the match just trying to shove each other, just trying to strong arm each other into the,
I was going to say, they do a callback to, like, stopping really short of the ropes, doing the old point to the head, you know? So, it's the old Foley funk.
This is great because they do kind of do these callbacks to, like, a couple of the bigger matches. Like, I like that they go for, when have you ever seen Omega go for a figure four other than in this match, right? Which is, like, so clearly a throwback to the very first barbed wire match. I thought it was really smart of them to leave one side of the rings open so that they can do some Kenny Omega shit.
That's mm-hmm. what I was going to bring up. Is like they, I think even for, do they have all of the ring ropes present, but then also just barbed wire around three of them, right? So there is a lot more, like they can still jump backwards, like, or lean against the ropes in a way that, like, I remember the women in the women's match couldn't, you can't bounce off of it at any point, even though there, you don't really want to bounce off of it because there's barbed wire wrapped around it. Like you, it gives them a bit more wiggle room and a bit more momentum mm-hmm. in the match, I think, to have the ropes there, but still have half of them rigged or half of them barbed wired. But
this match was crazy though. The wrestling was great in this match. I thought there were some pretty good spots, like so some of the props they brought in were a baseball bat with barbed wire and I guess explosions on it, and
how did they do that,
that's crazy. They had a steel chair with barbed wire wrapped around it, which led to one of my favorite spots in the match when Kenny Omega had John Moxley in the figure four. John Moxley picked up the steel chair with the barbed wire around it and used it as a saw on Kenny Omega's leg with the barbed wire to get him to let it go. I thought that spot was genius. I thought it was so good. Kenny Omega had a good powder spot in the match too, where he threw like
little
powder,
pocket sand.
Yeah, little black sand into
The pocket sand led directly into the first explosion, which was really good. If we're talking about clever spots or like favorite spots, I still like, I think one of my favorite spots in wrestling this year was the exploding rope break on the One Wing Angel.
So like, good. So good.
Where it's the entire history of that move and how it's like, you can't kick out of it. And Moxley doing the like, all right, I'm going to explode you off of me.
Yeah.
And the referee.
Pin. And the, incredible. The fucking the paradigm shift off the apron into the exploding board on ringside looked like Omega broke his goddamn neck.
And
you want to talk about getting tangled up in barbed wire and having to like extricate yourself from it, like,
just awful. And a great way to elevate it, right? Like I'm sure that they weren't the first ones to do a big outside the ring barbed wire bed or whatever, but like at least from the other four matches that we watched today, like that, this is something that is different and really elevates it. And that was a big moment, a big spot, and it, oh, just terrible. Just terrible.
Mm-hmm. Omega wins due to fuckery.
As he has been doing for his entire, all of his title runs right now.
Yeah.
I love that that's like your main thread through all of this, that if it isn't Don Callis, it's the Good Brothers, and if it isn't the Good Brothers, it's the Young Bucks, and it's like he always has that kind of ace up his sleeve.
Yeah. So he wins the match, and then the Good Brothers like handcuff Moxley and they beat him up a bunch, and then the rings, or like the countdown for the ring to explode begins. And then, like we were talking about, you know, it doesn't quite explode. Eddie Kingston runs in to save Moxley. Mm-hmm. Can't get him up, so he just decides to sacrifice himself, lays himself over Moxley's body. Ring doesn't explode, and it's sad.
Which is, I think, the even the Eddie Kingston sacrificing himself to save Moxley is a reference, I think, to the Onita Terry Funk match, where Onita beats Terry Funk down.
No spoilers.
Okay. Yeah.
But it's a reference. It's a reference.
I'm pretty sure it's a reference to that. Okay. So again, like going through this history of the exploding barbed wire death match. So here's the thing, Josh, and I think is this what you're gonna get at? You wanna? Okay, you call him out. You give it. Put the boots to him.
So how do you feel about the fact that the actual fuck up and all of the Eddie Kingston stuff is after the end of the match? Canonically, you do not take things that happen after the belt, it doesn't count into your bald head rating.
Very famously, the post-match does not count.
Always. For bald head ratings, it never counts. But for exploding bald head matches.
Yeah. So this is what
it's still part of the match, right?
Okay.
The countdown timer is still on. The match, in my head, is still going. Like, what are you going to do? Have a good night, everybody. And you say, like, 10, 9, 8. You know, and it's like, they just sign off, no explosion, nothing. No, the exploding is part of the match. It's on our shirts that we're all wearing right now. Come on now. But you got it. So I got to take that into account. This could have been, you know, the greatest in my head, right? Like as far as a match, the spots, what they did, everything within the match. It was so well crafted, right?
Mm-hmm.
But man alive, did that. That last spot really take it out. You know, and I think the worst part for me, there's a lot that happened in that moment that a lot of people clearly were scrambling to decipher, right? So the announce team, clearly they're all like, oh, well, it's good that just Eddie Kingston just even came out to help his friend out, you know? And it's like, and everybody's trying to like undersell it, and Excalibur's still trying to sell it a little bit.
Exactly. I think it was the confusion of like, should we sell this as like it went well?
Yeah.
Like it worked?
Exactly.
And Eddie's dead now? Or should we sell it as like it was a fuck up and oh no, but Eddie's sort of lying unconscious in the middle of the ring, so we gotta do something. Like the announcers don't really know. How it's like,
did people die after Kane's pyros? Because that's essentially what it was. It was just Kane's pyros, like it was just corner fireworks that went off, and so it's like Eddie selling.
Goldberg.
Goldberg and Kane.
If I were the refs, I would have like somebody better be in that person's ear, being like, "Tell Eddie to get up right now. He looks like a fucking asshole." Like you know, like
and the ref does like not the ref. I think the medic comes out and starts talking to him, but he should have been saying, get the fuck up right now. Like, you are not dead. Like,
Moxley, fine, sell. Moxley just got the shit kicked out of him. That's fine. Eddie Kingston, man. Oh, he looked like such a dweeb.
Yeah, poor Eddie. He really got the shit end of the stick there.
Yeah. I gave it four exploding bald heads.
All right.
I think that makes sense. It's a fair score. It could have got higher. But that explosion at the end, oof.
Guts it. That's
it. So yeah, that kind of does it for our retrospective of exploding barbed wire death matches. Obviously, there's stuff that we missed you know, maybe we'll do a part two. Maybe we'll do a little just like oops, all Onitas. Check that out sometime later if they ever bring this stipulation back. Or rumors right now is that Onita wants to wrestle Moxley in AEW.
Whoa.
If that comes to happen, we will definitely be doing a little Onita episode for that. In the meantime, we like to close every episode off with a little high spot and a botched spot, some honorable mentions to something that we really liked, something that we didn't care for so much. Who wants to go first?
I can go first and just start this ball rolling. I feel like I'm gonna just go very generic today. I didn't get any cool, weird little moments. So, my high spot is the insanity that is the Dragon Gate versus Filth and Fury match. Much music?
MTV.
MTV went wild with this show. It's wild to me that this was a TV show and that this episode never actually aired because it got canceled before it could air, which is like, has to be like the feather in their cap.
Yeah.
I would hope, unless the rest of the show is this intense. I don't know. So this is the definitely the high spot for me.
If it was Much Music, they would have featured Teddy Hart a lot more prominently for their CanCon ratings.
Yeah. Is Matt Cross Canadian?
No, he's from Cleveland, Ohio.
Boo. And my botch spot is going to be just the pyro not working out. I'm going to just be kind and I'll say for both the Cactus Jack and the AEW one, even though I feel like it really kneecaps the AEW match a lot worse than it does the Cactus Jack one. Like, I think they're able to improvise around that a lot better, whereas AEW kind of just like fumbles.
Yeah.
Their response to that mishap was not great. I'm just going to say, like, you really got to learn from your wrestling history if you ever want to do an exploding barbed wire death match where the ring do explode at any point. It's got to explode. You've really got to make sure that it explodes.
And, you know, just to double on that, it's I think I'm going to echo exactly Lauren's sentiments here. So the Dragon Gate Filth and Fury match was absolute fucking insanity. And I think most importantly, the explosion effects.
Yeah.
When anybody, the referee, like one of the members of the team, anytime anybody hit the ring, it looked like the arena was fucking exploding. And then they saved the best for last. And when the trigger was hit, the siren noises were going off. They dived out of the ring. It looked so fucking insane. And again, any of these matches that you need to go check out, I think it's just this, doesn't take much of your day. It's again, the actual match portion's about 6 minutes long and it's fucking insane. It's so good.
You've already listened to an hour and a half of this stupid podcast. You have 6 minutes to go.
Yeah, exactly.
Wrestling match.
Yeah. I think we spent
being in the crowd. Like, they had a crowd.
Yeah.
In a small crowd, to be fair.
And then
the temple.
And unfortunately,
they had a crowd.
Unfortunately, none of those people are alive.
Okay,
it does seem like it brings the building down. Like, how are they? Or maybe they're all blind, right? Like that explosion, that blinding white light.
I'm not putting the drop in there, Josh. I'm not doing it.
You gotta put the drop in there.
I had a great time watching all this. I thought I was gonna get deathmatch fatigue, and at no point was I like, I can't stomach this. I don't want to watch anymore. So I'm pulling a fast one on you guys. And oh, Josh, you didn't get to do your botch spot. I'm sorry. I'm stepping all over your shit.
No, it's fine. Botch spot was the same. It was the shitty handling of the Omega Mox pyro at the end. Not an explosion, just the pyro. Announcers handled it bad. Refs handled it bad. I feel it was just handled poorly. You know, I think on the next Dynamite, Don Callis said that that was his plan to make Moxley look like an idiot, which I feel in post is maybe the best way you can spin that. But you know, whatever. But great match, great everything, just real fucking popcorn fart of a finish.
For me, I'm going two highs, no botched.
That's not the rules. That's not the rules.
I make the rules. I'm the heel host. I'm the Don Callis. Right. I'm the invisible hand.
All right.
I love watching the ref inspect wrestlers for foreign objects before an exploding barbed wire death match that happened in the Combat Toyota match where he's patting him down. I'm like, my dude, what are you doing? This is crazy.
She could have a knife.
Yeah, I loved that. That was very funny. And speaking of the temple... my high spot is that Wrestling Society X was filmed in the exact same room as Lucha Underground.
Oh, I didn't know that.
We just recognized it.
I recognized it, and I think in like the YouTube comments, which I guess is not a fucking super official, right. Not peer reviewed, but it looked exactly like that, and it said it was filmed in Boyle Heights in L.A. which is where Lucha Underground... So it's like, did they just have a fucking wrestling set up in a warehouse for... So like 2007, and then I think... Did they just have it there for like 7 years? Mm-hmm. Completely untouched. And then they just like set decked it with some Lucha masks and some like a paint job.
Maybe.
For Lucha Underground.
I'm sure the local super kick takes place in there.
Yeah, like, maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
After they cleaned up the bodies from the explosion after the...
Yeah, you know what? Lucha Underground was the first promotion willing to go back into that haunted space.
That's the building that collapsed on Mil Muertes as a child.
Yeah! Oh my god!
He was in the audience at that show.
Yeah.
This is canon now. This is lore.
That's Wrestling Society X didn't get canceled. Everybody died in the explosion.
Yeah. Yeah. Lucha Underground was on a wrestling fan burial ground.
Yeah.
Amazing. I think that's about it, eh? That was our exploding barbed wire deathmatch retrospective episode.
Mm-hmm.
If there's obvious ones that we missed, Onita coming into the Tokyo Dome, obviously. But if there's some cool ones that you know that we should check out, you can hit us up at facebook.com/stonecoldshots. We're also on Instagram and Twitter at stonecoldshotspod and stonecoldshotspodcast.
Yeah, and you can leave us a rating and review on your podcasting app of choice. It really helps us out.
Give us those five exploding bald heads.
Ooh. Five exploding
heads. The elusive.
All right, we'll see you in 2 weeks for something fun.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.